All right, I will call this remote hearing of the Judiciary, Finance and Civil Law Committee to order. Today is February 1st, 2022, and this meeting is being held remotely per Rule 10.01, which allows us to hold our committee hearings remotely, and this is being recorded and live streamed by House Public Information. It looks like we have a quorum present. The clerk will take the roll.
Chair Becker Finn.
Present.
Vice Chair Moeller.
Present.
Representative Scott.
Present.
Representative Feist.
Present.
Representative Frazier.
Present.
Representative Grossel. Representative Hurt.
Present.
Representative Hollins.
Present.
Representative Johnson.
Present.
Representative Liebling.
Present.
Representative Long.
Present.
Representative Mortensen?
Present.
Representative Novotny?
Present.
Representative Farr?
Present.
Representative Robbins?
Present.
Representative Vang?
Rasmussen, present.
And Representative Zhang?
All right.
Representative Moran is present. I mean, I'm sorry. I'm not even in the committee. I'm doing two things at once. Sorry.
No problem, Chair Moran. It happens to the best of us. Double zooming is not for the faint of heart. Just as a reminder to everyone, since we haven't all been on Zoom together for a while, that I need you to use the raise hand function if you want to get on the list to speak. And please remember to mute yourselves when you're not actively speaking, and that will make things easier for everyone. It's been 2 years, but we can still use reminders, and I'm sure there will still be mistakes, just like in real life. The first item on the agenda is to move the minutes. Do I have a motion to move the minutes of April 14th, 2021?
So moved, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Vang. Representative Vang moves the minutes of April 14th, 2021. Any discussion to the minutes? All right, seeing none, all those in favor, please say aye.
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 Aye. Opposed? All right, the minutes are passed, and we will move right into our first bill. The first bill on the agenda today is House File 726. It is a Representative Bonner bill. I will move House File 726 be referred to the Committee on State Government Finance. And with that, Representative Bonner, I will turn it over to you to present your bill. Please go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. I appreciate the opportunity today. House File 726 proposes a constitutional amendment to be placed before the people of Minnesota to determine if they believe all people should have equal rights and protections under the law. The amendment itself is quite simple and quite elegant. It states, equality under the law shall not be abridged or denied on the account of gender. While there is a more modern and preferred term, we also know based on the recent Supreme Court case, Broxton versus Clayton County, that the terms gender and sex carry equal weight under the law. Specifically, the court ruled 6-3 that discrimination based on gender was the same as on the basis of sex. The Minnesota State Constitution is a reflection of who we are as a state, our values as Minnesotans, and fundamentally should represent equality under the law for all citizens. Currently, it does not. We ask of our citizens that they abide by our laws, that they respect the rule of law, yet we don't currently provide for equal rights and protections under the law. I will assert here today that our role as lawmakers is to represent the interest of 100% of our citizens all of the time, and not 50% of our citizens some of the time. Which begs the question, if our state constitution does not provide equal protection, which of our citizens do we exclude, and on what grounds can we as legislators, as lawmakers, decide who should and should not be included? I would assert it is our duty as legislators to protect every citizen equally under the law, all of the time. In the past, arguments have been made that suggested that equality under the law would have dire consequences. I would argue that not having equality under the law creates dire consequences. But none of these dire consequences that have been foretold have come true. It was once believed that women might be asked to participate in the military. Today, women voluntarily serve with honor and distinction. They protect our state and our country, side by side with their male counterparts. Do we as lawmakers have the right to look these brave defenders in the eye and tell them they do not deserve equal rights under the law? Have they not earned these rights? It was once believed that equal rights meant that women might serve as pastors, rabbis, and faith leaders, that this could be the unraveling of the very fabric of faith and religion. And yet, faith and our religious institutions are stronger than ever before, and that based on their devout and steadfast leadership. They serve God and our communities. As lawmakers, should we look them in the eye and tell them they deserve anything less than equal protection under the law? Do they not deserve this right? I am a firm believer that the citizens of Minnesota know inherently, deep down, the values we hold dear, that fundamentally all of our citizens deserve, all of our citizens have earned equality under the law, in service to each of us every day. As lawmakers, it is our job to ensure the rights of all of our citizens. This bill simply allows us to get out of the way, to allow our citizens to judge for themselves if they believe that inherently all people, all Minnesotans, should have the expectation of equal rights and protections under the law. With that, members, I ask that you vote yes to put this most fundamental of decisions in the hands of Minnesotans. And with that, Madam Chair, I have a group of incredible individuals here to speak today who come from branches of the military, who served as faith leaders, and who are extraordinary leaders in their community that I would love for you all to hear from.
All right. Thank you, Representative Bonner. We do have a pretty lengthy list of testifiers today. So members, we'll get through the testimony first before we move to discussion. And for our testifiers, we need you to keep your testimony to under 3 minutes. So I will keep that fairly to all of you, but please remember that we are constrained and there are a lot of testifiers today. So first up on the list, and I apologize if I say your first name wrong, I have Chayo Smith. If you want to unmute yourself and introduce yourself for the record, you can then go ahead with your testimony.
Madam Chair, committee members, thank you so much. Good morning. So my name is Chayo Smith. I work as a bioenvironmental engineer and public health officer and alternate sexual response coordinator for the Department of Defense at the 934th Airlift Wing. As a 19-year military member, I currently serve with the Minnesota Army National Guard. I'm a graduate student of the University of Minnesota pursuing an MS in environmental science. However, my most important job and my life's work are my children. I'm the mother of a 17-year-old girl and a 15-year-old boy. As a civilian, I am typically one of two or three women in any given meeting on any given day, and I'm thankful as I see more female presence as time passes. These women rise to the challenge to become brilliant emerging leaders, and I'm grateful to lead, assist, and personally invest in the success of each person that I mentor. We all do better when we all do better, and gender has absolutely nothing to do with it. I treat everyone equally. As a military member who has attended both Air Force and Army basic training, I was in flights or platoons with both men and women training to be airmen and soldiers to serve our country. We were cut down and built up in the same ways that only the military can do, for better or for worse. While I take pride in my military service, each step of the way, I felt I had to be better, smarter, and faster than any of my male counterparts. I was never faster because I disliked running. Sometimes this competition brings out the best and the brightest parts of ourselves, I must admit. However, the unrelenting scrutiny over my performance as a female troop on an all-male team was exhausting and contributed to burnout. Because I did not want to rock the boat as a female, I did not report my own sexual assault until 11 years later. I did not want to jeopardize my career, and I remained silent. One in four women are assaulted in the military, and men are not far behind us. It is one in six. The Minnesota Air National Guard, Army National Guard, and Air National Guard does not fall under the federal UCMJ, which is the United Code of Military Justice. They fall under a state code at which the state in which the state constitution is the governing body. It is necessary that we include inclusive language in our constitution. I am honored to be able to serve in my current capacity, and I hope to be an asset and mentor for years to come. My career is not over yet. I'm a leader with much to give. But how can I expect my immediate leaders to treat all of us equally when we cannot get our legislatures to pass a bill that would put ERA on the ballot to allow our citizens to vote on it? I have to give my hats off to the U of M. All my professors are incredible, and perhaps this is where I see equality in the community at its best. My professors treat everybody equitably and equally, and we are encouraged to share and contribute each other's learning and success, regardless of our differences. In fact, they are celebrated. I'm thrilled to see more female scientists in my field because it was getting a little lonely out there. Coming from a male-dominated and honor culture, I feel like this is what equality looks like. Finally, I'm a mom to these incredible two human beings, Lucy and Sawyer. They are strong and smart with brilliant and sensitive hearts. When Lucy was younger, I taught her how to negotiate her salary for babysitting duties. I told her not to be afraid to ask for an extra dollar since she took a CPR Red Cross class. At that time, the gender wage gap was about 21%. And when I explained this to her, she told me that it wasn't fair. Instead of telling her that life wasn't fair, I challenged her to make it more fair by negotiating for her real worth.
Ms. Smith, I need you to wrap it up.
Oh, okay. Thank you. I would like to see the ERA pass so it could be included in the ballot for our future to vote, for our future, our children to vote on the ERA. The future decides, the future, they are the future and they should have the right to decide. I asked another friend and she said that she had bigger fish to fry than the ERA in talking about voter rights. My argument here is that we are talking about the very foundation upon which those laws are built. We need this verbiage. We need equal rights in our Minnesota state constitution, and we need to be able to vote on it. Our children need to be able to vote on it. They deserve that. Thank you.
All right, thank you for your testimony. And I will remind our other testifiers, out of respect to the other testifiers, we really do need to stick to that 3 minutes. So if you need to set a timer on your own phone, maybe that's the way to do it. Next, we'll move over to Erin May Quaid from Gender Justice. If you could unmute yourself, introduce yourself for the record, and then go ahead with your testimony.
Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Erin May Quaid. I'm the Advocacy Director at Gender Justice, a legal and policy advocacy nonprofit dedicated to advancing gender equity through the law. And I'm here this morning to talk about why we need a state equal rights amendment. As many of you may be aware, the only explicit right to gender equality in the state or federal constitution is our hard-fought right to vote. Because of this, Supreme Court Justice Antonin Scalia said once, "Certainly the constitution does not require discrimination on the basis of gender. The only issue is whether it prohibits it. It doesn't. Nobody ever thought that that's what it meant. Nobody ever voted for that. If the current society wants to outlaw discrimination by gender, hey, we have things called legislatures. Well, members, House File 726 is Minnesota's opportunity to vote to outlaw discrimination on the basis of gender. Enshrining the basic principle of gender equality in the Constitution would make it clear that the citizens of this state expect its courts to apply a very high level of scrutiny to laws that create or reinforce gender disparities. It would make it clear that such laws would have to be justified by a compelling state interest and must be found necessary to achieve that interest. It would place gender equality on the same footing as racial and religious equality. At present, under the current federal standard, under intermediate scrutiny, the government's interest to justify gender-based disparity only has to be important, and the law under review has to be substantially related. Obviously, a much wider scope of gender disparities caused by law could be tolerated. The ERA here in Minnesota would create a backdrop to the hodgepodge of anti-discrimination laws we have in our state. An ERA based on gender equality would assume all Minnesotans, would protect all Minnesotans from laws and policies and unfounded gender stereotypes. As a noted professor mentioned in the documentary, Equal Means Equal, this is not just a women's rights amendment, it's an equal rights amendment. And moreover, a state ERA would give the Minnesota legislature clear guidance on future legislation and a mandate from citizenry. It would be another tool for advocates to use to attack the remaining manifestations of gender inequality in our state, which there are many and are profound. While no one can predict exactly what the effect of passing a state ERA would be, I can say with assuredness that the effects would not be immediate. They would be incremental and they would happen as a result of legal challenges. And those challenges would invoke a very deliberate process of evaluation governed by rules of evidence and procedure. But I'll end with this. Our Constitution is a living, breathing document, and it's not done until we enumerate specifically the rights of all of our citizens. Amendments to our Constitution, state or federally, don't fix things immediately. They are a beacon to future generations. They are proof of the idealism that allows values and principles to take root and grow. They are notations where we specify where the work isn't done. And members, our work on gender equity isn't done. I urge you to pass House File 726 and send to the voters of Minnesota an opportunity to enshrine gender equity into our Constitution. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Next up, I have Christy Janigo. If you can unmute yourself and introduce yourself for the record and then go ahead with your testimony.
Madam Chair and members, my name is Dr. Christy Janigo, and I am a prior service non-commissioned officer of the North Dakota Army National Guard and former sergeant with the 132nd Quartermaster Company. I am an Osseo Maple Grove American Legion Post 172 member, currently serving as their chaplain and legislative liaison. I am a lay leader at Maple Grove Lutheran Church, where I am the church council vice president and an assisting minister. I hold a PhD in design and sustainability from the University of Minnesota. My full-time work is as the policy director for Commissioner Kevin Anderson of Hennepin County, District 7. I grew up a rural middle child of five siblings. As a teenager, I was fiercely independent and seeking adventure, and that's why I joined the Army. I followed in the footsteps of my Grandpa Roland, who served in Okinawa in World War II, and my Uncle Ron, who also served in the Guard. I kept the family legacy of Army service alive in my generation. I went to Fort Leonard Wood, Missouri for combat training just 2 weeks after the terrorist attacks of 9/11/2001. It felt good to do something constructive. I served 6 years as a 92 Whiskey, an Army Ground Forces support role that functions like a city water treatment plant only on a 30-foot truck. I may look different from what some picture for prior service military. The VA and partner organizations promote a campaign called I Am Not Invisible to bring awareness to challenges female vets face. There is a persistent false notion of women being less than men to overcome. That is a risk to the strength of our military and our national security. I am not invisible. So I ask you today to support this bill to allow the people of Minnesota to add the Equal Rights Amendment to our state's constitution. If I can honorably serve with the willingness to die for God and country, then I've earned equal rights under the law. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Next, we will move on to Luna Allen Bakarian. If you can introduce yourself for the record and then go ahead with your testimony, please.
Thank you, and that was correct, Madam Chair, thanks. I'm Luna Allen Bakarian. I'm the public policy strategist at YWCA Minneapolis. Madam Chair and members of the Judiciary Finance and Civil Law Committee, good morning, and thank you for hearing testimony today on this critical matter. Happy Black History Month, happy February. I am honored to be here virtually on a personal note as I wear the sash and pin from my family from when my grandmother, mother, and aunt were a part of the Minnesota delegation to the ERA march in Washington, D.C. in 1978. And I'm grateful to be here representing YWCA Minneapolis. Our organization is one of 200 local associations of YWCA USA, and we all share the bold and necessary mission of eliminating racism, empowering women and girls, and promoting peace, justice, freedom, and dignity for all. We have sister sites in Minnesota and in the Heartland region, and each of us work for this mission in unique ways. For us at YWCA Minneapolis, this means encouraging inclusive and holistic health and wellness at three sites, operating 5 early childhood education centers in Minneapolis and St. Paul, leading a workforce development program to train teachers, supporting our youth through a number of girls and youth programs, and inviting our community to learn about racial and gender justice and civic engagement. In direct alignment with our mission, we are in strong support of an amendment to Minnesota's constitution, affording gender equality and protection under Minnesota law, and of allowing Minnesotans to have the opportunity to make this amendment. We are also supportive of legislation to remove time limits for the ERA and to ensure compliance with the ERA in existing statute and practice. Very simply, all Minnesotans deserve representation and trust in our constitution. We know that there are major discrepancies in pay based on gender, further exacerbated at the intersections of race. We know that there are stark and unacceptable gender disparities when it comes to relationship and state violence. Thank you to Violence Free Minnesota for their work to bring research of this nature front and center for over 20 years. And we know that gender imbalance remains in the care of our young people and our elders, in families and in employment. These are just a few of the things that necessitate an equal rights amendment. It is of utmost importance that the legal protections of our state are available to all Minnesotans. Let's uplift and embrace the beauty of all Minnesota's populations and move toward communal thriving. We have ratified before and we can ratify again. Many thanks to fellow advocates here today, including for your service to our country. Thank you to ERA Minnesota for organizing, and many thanks to all of you for your work on behalf of Minnesotans. I'll leave the rest of my time.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Next, we'll move on to Betty Fulliard, ERA Minnesota founder. Please unmute yourself, introduce yourself for the record, and then go ahead with your testimony.
Madam Chair, for some reason, my video won't start. Is somebody in the committee prevented that? Because it says it's unable to start.
Nope, I don't think so. If you could just go ahead and give your testimony verbally, that would be great. Thank you.
Thank you. Yes, she just gave me permission to come in. Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'm Betty Fulliard, former state representative and the current founder of ERA Minnesota. I also just spent the last year on the Attorney General's Task Force on Expanding Women's Economic Security. And you're going to be seeing a report coming out very shortly to the legislature with recommendations. And one of those recommendations is to allow the citizens of Minnesota to vote to add an equal rights amendment to our state constitution. I'm going to be very brief because there are other wonderful testifiers, and I've been very amazed at the outstanding testifiers so far. But let me just say that Minnesota women on average make 79 cents to a man's dollar. And that wage gap is even larger for Black, Indigenous, Latinx, Asian, and women of color. And those numbers, for example, are 54 cents or 61 cents to a man's dollar. Women make up the majority of workers paid at or below the minimum wage. Two-thirds of seniors living in poverty are women. And women, of course, are underrepresented in high-paying STEM jobs. There are so many ways that we are dealing in Minnesota with these huge gaps. And, of course, the pandemic has hit women very, very hard. And the New York Times said it was a 1-2-3 punch. First, jobs lost, and then jobs lost in government, in hospitality, retail, healthcare, and of course, the burden of childcare and caregiving to other members of the family and community. With that, I'm going to stop and give the additional time to other testifiers. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Next on the list, I have Suzanne Wilhite. Ms. Wilhite, if you can introduce yourself for the record and go ahead with your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair, representatives. My name is Suzanne Wilhite, and I am the president, current president of ERA Minnesota, and a passionate supporter of the Equal Rights Amendment. And today I'm representing both of those roles as organization leader and a personal advocate. ERA Min is advocate for both a state and a federal constitution that includes the Equal Rights Amendment. And currently neither US or Minnesota constitutions guarantee equal rights for all people. And an explicit prohibition on sex discrimination is not contained in those documents. The ERA would provide equality of rights under the law. And we need it, as Betty mentioned, for equal pay for equal work, fair health care coverage, protection from sexual violence, and workplace discrimination. And we heard from Airman Quaid that, and our Justice Antonin Scalia says the U.S. Constitution doesn't prohibit discrimination on the basis of sex. So we know we need this. And 26 other states currently have an Equal Rights Amendment of some form. And this is not new legal territory. There's no unforeseen consequences. California since 1869, Florida, Iowa passed an ERA in 1998. We need the state ERA to provide that foundation for legal equality in Minnesota. My personal passion of advocating for equal legal rights came after many years of experience. I've had different types of sex discrimination, unequal pay to sexual harassment. In one of my jobs, actually working in a government agency, I worked with a man who was repeatedly harassed and stalked several women. It was an internal investigation, no legal action. The perpetrator was eventually moved to another work location. No repercussions for the sexual harassment. What I learned was that the legal system was not fair, and it perpetuated inequality and rewarded sexual harassment. We need fair laws, and we need for all people to have equal rights in our federal and state constitution. The time is overdue. Betty has mentioned the issues around COVID. We know that's happening. A March 2021 study from the Department of Labor gave those same statistics. But the pandemic has set the women's labor force back more than 30 years. Women earn less in the same race and ethnicity as their counterparts at every level of educational achievement. So there's an urgency. I support these ERA bills that are on the docket. I believe elected legislators should allow Minnesotans to vote for themselves whether or not to add the Equal Rights Amendment to our state constitution. Equality for all persons is necessary and long overdue. So thank you, Madam Chair, representatives, for allowing me to testify to the importance of these ERA bills in the Minnesota legislature.
Thank you for your testimony. Next up, I have Curtis Johnson. Curtis, if you can unmute yourself, introduce yourself for the record, and then go ahead with your testimony.
Okay, I'm having a similar issue with my video, but I will, there we go. Okay, thank you. Good morning, Chair Parker Finn, committee members. My name is Curtis Johnson. I live in Little Canada, which is in Senate District 42B. I've worn a number of hats in my career, but my most important role is as a father and a husband. And I'm here today to ask this committee to pass House File 726, enshrining equal rights protection for all citizens is not and should not be considered a partisan exercise. 23 states have adopted state constitutions or constitutional amendments that prohibit the denial of equal rights under the state law based on sex. And these states include California, Indiana, Montana, Utah, Wyoming, Virginia, Texas, and Iowa. Okay, I'm just gonna repeat that in case you didn't get that. Iowa. How are we behind Iowa? Today, on this date, literally 157 years ago, President Abraham Lincoln signed a joint House and Senate resolution that later became the 13th Amendment to the U.S. Constitution. The president does not have an official role in amendments. I know that. But it was an important first step towards the ratification of this amendment by the states later that year. I'm asking the members of this committee to take the first step to guaranteeing the rights of all Minnesotans, not because of political ideology, and Lord, not because I told you so, but because it's simply the right thing to do. Because today is the first day of Black History Month, I will end my remarks with this quote from Dr. King. Time was always right to do what is right. Thank you for your consideration, and happy birthday, Representative Mueller.
Thank you very much, Mr. Johnson. And I wasn't going to out Vice Chair Mueller, but yes, we are all very happy that it is Vice Chair Mueller's birthday today. And she's kicking it off right with a committee hearing starting at 8:30 in the morning. So thank you for your testimony, Mr. Johnson. We will move to Amy Caucott. If you could unmute yourself, introduce yourself for the record, and then go ahead with your testimony, please.
Good morning, Madam Chair and members of the committee, and I would hope that my video can come on so that you can see I'm dressed in my suffragette costume. Thank you. My name is Amy Caucott, and I'm from Rochester. I'm also speaking on behalf of the League of Men Voters of Minnesota, which believes in all of these bills and hopes that you will support them. The League of Men Voters is actually an organization, of course, a nonpartisan organization that grew out of the suffrage movement. Part of the reason to dress like this is to remind one and all how long it takes to get anything about equality for women. 72 years before we got the vote, and now it's been almost 100 years pushing for the Equal Rights Amendment. When it comes to rights for women, all legislators seem to be very cautious. They're so afraid something is going to happen if we let women have equal rights. I would tell you that we have certainly had enough experience. 26 states, not Minnesota, have equal rights amendments in their constitutions. Look at Wyoming. Back in 1869, its first constitution included equal rights for women and votes for women. I'm a little bit embarrassed for my state. I am used to Minnesota being number one, number two, in the top 10. We are not even in the top half of states when it comes to the Equal Rights Amendment. So I would urge everybody on this committee to vote yes on all of these bills. We need the chance to get equality for women into our Constitution. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your testimony. And our next testifiers, it looks like you guys are all signed into the same Zoom. I have Ann Tracy, Elaine Tracy, and Lily O'Donnell. If you just make sure that if whoever is going to speak, that each one of you who's going to speak introduces yourself for the record, and then you can go ahead with your testimony.
Thank you. We will. We seem to be having the same problem with the video, so maybe someone can help with that. But Madam Chair, representatives, thank you for having us. Tech issue on our part here. My name is Ann Tracy. I'm on the board of Women's March Minnesota, and I'm here with my mom and my daughter telling personal stories. We are three generations asking for the security of equal rights for ourselves and our future generations. We have seen improvements over the years, but it's been incremental and without constitutional support, which means we don't have rights. We have the illusion or assumption of rights, and there's no security in that.
Madam Chair, representatives, my name is Elaine Tracy. I'm the mother of three, grandmother of seven, and a former senior systems analyst. When I was in grade school, only boys could be on the police patrol, or servers at church. There were no sports teams for the girls. I envied their opportunities. When I was married, my salary was not included in our mortgage applications, and I needed my husband's signature for a credit card or major purchases. He did not need mine. Most damaging was how these limitations reduced my expectations for myself. I didn't feel equal because I wasn't, and I couldn't dream equally.
Madam Chair, Representatives, again, I'm Ann Tracy, daughter to Elaine. I have three daughters and I work in a high-tech field. I walked easily through some of the doors my mom opened. I played a sport. It was assumed I would go to college, even get graduate degrees. But 1 year into one of my first career jobs, I learned I was being paid considerably less than male counterparts. The employers fixed the situation, but it happened decades after the Equal Pay Act of 1963. Greater protections in the ERA would help enforce equality.
Madam Chair, Representatives, I'm Lily O'Donnell, daughter to Anne, granddaughter to Elaine, and college student. Some things are better for me, some things aren't. In high school, the boys seem to get the best times or spaces for sports events and practices. In grade school, girls couldn't wear yoga pants because they were too distracting to the boys. The boys' uniforms were not based on reactions of girls. But more worrying now, I'm seeing that transgender and non-binary friends are running into roadblocks like my grandma did, and worse. Some opportunities are limited. Even bathroom access is limited. There is discrimination. The impact is that, like my grandma, students are still limited in expectations and dreams. Because of this limitation of gender equality, the community is not reaping the benefits of our best selves.
Finally, Madam Chair, Representatives, thank you again for your attention and for taking up the equal rights. It's necessary, it's time, it's overdue.
Thank you so much for your testimony. I think that's the first time we've had three generations testifying at the same time. So thank you very much. With that, members, I don't have any other public, other folks who have signed up from the public to testify. And so with that, we will move on to discussion. I know we've got a couple hands up with potentially questions for Representative Bonner. So first on the list, I have Representative Scott.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And this, I will be questioning mostly the author. And then I have one question for the first testifier. I wrote her name down somewhere, blah, blah, blah. She's with the Army National Guard. I thought I wrote it down, but perhaps you can help me with that when the time comes. To the bill's author, I'm just wondering, what is your definition? What's the definition in statute of gender? What definition are we working with?
Representative Bonner.
Actually, I believe we have legal counsel here from Gender Justice as well as research, and perhaps they would be able to shed light on the specifics of that in Minnesota statute.
Okay. Whoever wants to take that one, please introduce yourself for the record and go ahead.
Good morning, Chair, members of the committee. My name is Christy Hall, and I'm a senior staff attorney at Gender Justice. And I am here to answer questions about the difference between the word sex and the word gender and what these terms mean. So sex and gender are defined in many different ways, in many different statutes, and interpreted by courts as well, regardless of what explicit definitions there are. There obviously is not in this specific amendment a definition of gender in the proposed amendment, but it's understood to be inclusive. Just as the word sex is understood to be inclusive. And that is the intention is to use a word that signals to the public that we intend to be inclusive of gender identity, sexual orientation, and the like. And I'm happy to answer further questions about that.
All right, Representative Scott.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And who's our House researcher on this? Because I would like to know some of the citations for the definition of gender in our current statute.
I believe we have Ben Johnson on. Ben, I don't know if this is you or someone else, but if someone from House Research wants to, maybe Mary Mullen, introduce yourself and take that one.
Hi, Chair and members, this is Mary Mullen. The terms sex and gender are used in various different places in the statute. I could send you different places where it's, you know, where it's referenced. It's not typically defined as like in a definition section.
Thank you, Ms. Mullen. Representative Scott.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So Ms. Mullen, there's no clear definition in Minnesota statute of what the definition of gender.
Ms. Mullen.
There, not that I know of that would correspond to this provision.
Okay, thank you.
All right, Representative Scott.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And so to the bill's author, I think that's very problematic. Words mean things. And I understand Ms. Hall in her, what she just said was that it was supposed to be meant to be inclusive. And my understanding of the ERA was equal rights for women. And it was cited by the three generations of folks there that, you know, the grandmother, I believe, said, you know, she wasn't allowed to play sports, all these things that have changed since she was growing up. And I don't want to go backwards on that stuff by opening this up to gender. And we had this conversation a couple of years ago on the House floor, particularly around women's sports and how this is going to have women, all the strides that they've made in that area, it's going to drive them backwards. There's a, you know, you've probably seen the stories of this female or this transgender swimmer that now is identifying as a woman, and he's beating all the records. All women are losing scholarships because these trans people are coming up and they're taking the place of women because biological men are stronger, and it puts women at a disadvantage, which is why Title IX happened, because there is a difference with physicality there. And so I'm just wondering what the bill's author, how she would respond to those concerns.
Representative Bonner.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, first, I want to remind the body and ground us in the fact that this particular bill places before the state of Minnesota, the citizens of our state, the ability to decide whether every person in the state of Minnesota should have equal protections under the law. The bill does not speak necessarily to that issue. However, I will say that in particularly in terms of the word gender versus sex, I certainly understand and appreciate Representative Scott's point of view, but I will also state that the Supreme Court, the highest law of the land, according to the Broxton decision, has actually suggested that those terms can be and should be used interchangeably under the law, that they have equal weight, that they have equal meaning in terms of enforcement of the law. And for that reason, I think that's all the explanation we need.
Representative Scott.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, I would disagree with that. And what I'm trying to avoid here is passing something that's going to have unintended consequences and going to move people backwards. And I think there's plenty of evidence out there that that could happen. My next question is, you know, we have equal pay laws in the state of Minnesota. We have protections in our statute right now. How will this change? How will this change things? If someone is discriminated based on pay, can they not now bring an action through the Minnesota Civil Rights Department and seek justice that way? And Madam Chair, thank you. And if the ERA was adopted, what mechanism would they use to file a suit?
Representative Bonner.
Well, I can speak to the first part of that. We do know that currently, because we do not have equal protections provided under the law, that there is a lower level of scrutiny. Certainly the Judicial Committee can understand that concept a little bit deeper, perhaps. Quite frankly, that means that when a case is brought based on our current or existing laws, that our courts having that lower level of scrutiny certainly are not having the same ability to potentially prevent discrimination. We know that the Constitution of our state, well, it certainly doesn't encourage discrimination on the basis of sex or gender. It also doesn't necessarily prohibit it. And we do potentially have a legal scholar here, or we have research that could perhaps speak more directly to the mechanism.
Representative Bonner, are you asking someone to weigh in, or are you just not sure what you were?
Yes, please.
Do you know who you would like to weigh in?
Well, we have the Attorney for Gender Justice here, or we may have House Research that can speak to the mechanism that would be used to bring that forward. I am not an attorney, so I don't feel that I am the appropriate individual to address that legal mechanism.
Okay. Ms. Hall, if you want to take that one.
Certainly. Good morning again, Chair, members of the committee. So I have filed lawsuits under both the Minnesota Human Rights Act and the Minnesota Constitution. And the process of filing a charge with the Minnesota Department of Human Rights is something that you can do to enforce the Minnesota Human Rights Act. You can also go to court. You can also go to court on a constitutional violation. So you can simply file a lawsuit there. And those are options that are both available. And I do want to point out in response to, you know, some of the questions about exactly what does gender mean, or how does it work, or how would it then be interpreted by courts? The Minnesota Constitution already protects the rights of transgender individuals. NH versus Anoka, Hennepin County, which is a case that I was an attorney on, was decided last summer in a precedential decision by the Court of Appeals, and held that transgender folks are already protected under the Minnesota Constitution. So, and again, this specific amendment does not require any particular judicial interpretation. As we've noted earlier, as testifiers have noted earlier, these amendments are in place all around the country. And the point of a constitutional amendment is not to force a judicial decision one way or the other. It is simply to enshrine in our highest form of law, the equal rights of all people. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Hall. And I'll also remind members, the question before us with this bill is whether this question should be put to the voters. That's what the bill does. Any additional questions, Representative Scott? Otherwise, I have a couple other people on the list.
Right. And I'll just two final questions, Madam Chair. Thank you for allowing me to query the author. To the author, does this bill, if this would become part of our Constitution, would it apply to the private sector as well, or just government?
Representative Bonner.
I believe the intent of a constitutional amendment is to apply to all of its citizens of the state.
Representative Scott.
But Madam Chair, so where in this bill is that articulated that it would apply to both public and private sector?
Representative Bonner.
The bill itself does not in specific call that out. Again, I want to remind you that this is an amendment to place before the people of Minnesota the ability to decide for themselves whether or not they believe that all Minnesotans should have equal rights and protections under the law.
Representative Scott.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, Representative Bonner, don't you think the people should be informed, fully informed, before they cast that vote if this is on the ballot?
I do believe that.
Representative Bonner, I think that was an actual question or not a rhetorical question, but.
That was an actual question.
Bonner. Okay. The tone, I couldn't tell. Representative Bonner.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I believe that the people of Minnesota, fundamentally at their core, have everything they need to establish whether or not they believe their neighbors, their friends, their military service members, their legal or their church leaders and faith leaders, whether their neighbors have the ability to have equal protections and rights under the laws of Minnesota. I think that is all that they need to make that decision.
All right, final comment, Representative Scott, and then I'm gonna move on to Representative Robbins.
Yeah, and I have just a question for the first testifier in that if the ERA were in place, how our experience would have been different. But Madam Chair, to the bill's author. I'm not distrusting of the people of Minnesota, but I think if they're voting on something like the ERA and they think it's going to apply to their private employer as well as the public employer, and then this thing should pass and they find out otherwise, that's not so great. So, Madam Chair, if I could ask that first testifier, if she's still with us, how the passage of the ERA would have changed her circumstances. Thank you. And then I'll shut up.
All right. Thank you, Representative Scott. So I think that you're referring to Ms. Smith. Ms. Smith, if you're still with us, she was asking how, if the ERA had been in effect, how that would have changed the circumstances for you. And if you can just go ahead with your answer to that question. Thank you.
Well, I probably wouldn't be explaining to my daughter how to negotiate her salary for babysitting. I would probably actually tell her that she needs to just put something forth and she doesn't have to fight for what she's actually worth. I did give that talk to my son as well. I think that the wage pay gap is an atrocity that we need to address with our daughters specifically. I did not feel the need to have that conversation with my son. If you're asking me and how that would have actually helped my sexual assault, I believe that at the time that it happened, our state would have had a stronger sexual assault response force and somebody that I could have talked to here back here in the state, since the assault actually happened out of state while I was on a tour of duty. Because the Minnesota National Guard does not fall under federal UCMJ regulations, I did not feel that I had a Minnesota representative that I could speak to and seek help at that time. And if you really want to know, that's why I kept quiet about it. I did not have that resource back here in Minnesota where I could refer back here, and that would have changed my circumstances. But the Equal Rights Amendment is not just for me. It's also for the men who are sexually assaulted within our ranks. There are 1 in 6. This is an equal rights amendment for everyone. So it's not just my circumstance that I'm concerned about. It's my son's, if he possibly wants to join the Marines. It's my daughter, if she wants to go into the Air Force or she wants to go into the Army. It's for the future. And so when I hear arguments like, it gives female disadvantages in sports and things like that, there are certain regulations that those individual people can put into place to make the playing field more fair and more even. This is an equal rights thing for everyone. This is a Minnesota state constitutional change that would affect everyone. And actually this hearing is just to put HF 726 on the ballot for our people to decide. So I don't think it's that scary to allow constituents to vote how they want to vote on this specific issue. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ms. Smith. With that, we do have a couple other people on the list. So now I will go to Representative Robbins.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And thank you to everyone for the testimony today. As was referenced, I think we had this discussion a couple of years ago, so I don't want to belabor some of the points that Representative Scott already went through. But I do think I want to clear up the record for the public a little bit about, there's been sort of a lot of back and forth about this applies to sex. Several of the testifiers only reference sex, and this bill is much broader. It applies to gender. The ERA thing that Minnesota ratified in the 70s said sex. This state constitution would be gender. And I just want to make sure there's no confusion about that, because it is materially different. And to that point, I'm a woman. I have raised three daughters. I really care about this issue. But one of the things that's been talked about a lot is women's economic security. And I am very concerned about how using the term gender in this constitutional amendment would affect women-owned businesses. So Representative Bonner, if you wouldn't mind commenting on that. If we use gender instead of sex, my understanding is that that could nullify state grants, state contracts for things that are trying to support women-owned businesses. So could you address how this will affect them?
Representative Bonner.
Well, first,
I would like to point out, quite frankly, that we need to establish once again that the Supreme Court, the highest law of the land in the United States of America, under the Broxton decision, did establish that the terms gender and sex were applicable, that they were equal under the status of the law. I just want to be very crystal clear about that when we're making that distinction, that the highest law of our land views those terms equally under the law, just to be clear. So in terms of having an impact on the ability of Minnesota's business owners to have those in place, I do not believe there will be an effect. However, I will also tell you that I am not a legal attorney, and I have not fought or litigated any of these cases, nor have any of us. However, I can also tell you that this law, that the Equal Rights Amendment exists in 26 states on the state level already, and we have not experienced any of the issues that you are referring to, Representative Roberts. We also have one additional state that currently has the ERA on the ballot this fall, and three other states who have currently passed the ERA through one of the two bodies.
All right, follow up, Representative Robbins, and then I want to get to Representative Novotny.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Bonner. I just want to clarify that that Supreme Court decision applied to federal civil rights statutes. It wouldn't impact the state constitution decision. So that's something we need to clarify. The other thing I really want to clarify is many testifiers have referenced this notion that 26 states have ERA in their state constitutions, which is true. But all but one of those use the word sex, not the word gender. Of those 26 states, only Rhode Island uses the word gender. So we cannot say that that is what is going on all around the country. And I really think being factual and accurate is very important for the voters to understand, if this should pass, what they would be voting on and how it would affect women's rights. And I think there's been a lot of confusion about how this will affect sex versus gender. And I think there will be severe possible negative consequences for women if this goes on the state constitution. So I just want to be on record as trying to clarify these points. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Robbins. Representative Bonner, I really want to get to the other members. I'm sure we'll give you time to close, but I need to get to the other members of the committee so we can have discussion. Representative Novotny.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My question is for the author. If the two terms, sex and gender, are interchangeable, as you said, and there's not a legal definition of gender, what definition of sex are you using? The only one I could find in the research looking on the phone as I'm waiting here is
Representative Novotny, if you can lean closer to your laptop, your mic Thank is you. Going in and out as you move your head. Go ahead.
So I'll start from the beginning. What if we don't have a legal definition of gender other than you to tell me that it's interchangeable with the phrase sex? Found a few references for sex in the Human Rights Act. What definition of sex then are you using? Dealt in statutes and interpretation of statutes for my whole career. When there's a red underlined word that'll take us to a definition, what is the definition you are going to use? That's my question. Thank you.
Representative Bonner.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I will say first off that the reason that I believe the question that you are asking, Representative Novotny, and thank you for the question, is why did we choose to use the version of the bill that includes the word gender versus the word sex? Quite frankly, that is a good question, and thank you for it. The reason for that is that typically gender is considered to be a more modern term. It is, in some cases, in more popular vernacular, to be considered a more inclusive term. And most importantly, when speaking with individuals at the grassroots level, our voters, our organizations in our communities from across the state, what we heard was that they have a strong preference for the word gender as opposed to sex, because it is a more modern term. In terms of the definitions, I will let states decide what those.
Representative Bonner, I think you muted yourself.
I'm good, thank you.
Okay, thank you, Representative Bonner. All right, we're gonna go to Representative Moeller and then we're gonna go to the vote. Representative Moeller.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I know that the members on the committee know this, but for public watching, there are also there's written testimony that's often submitted to our committees. And we do look at that testimony, and I'm looking at the Minnesota Catholic Conference testimony that was submitted in letter form. As a practicing Catholic, I feel like it's something that I wanted to address. They're not here to be able to ask them questions, but I'm particularly troubled by the second to last paragraph of that, where it says, fortunately, more and more people are waking up to the reality that the sexual revolution's treatment of women like men has not improved the well-being of women and has instead led to increased sexual exploitation, sadness, and the Me Too phenomenon. And it seems like they're blaming sexual assault on the sexual revolution. And that's just an astounding to me lack of understanding of sexual violence and sexual discrimination, particularly against women, which has existed well before the sexual revolution. It's based on power and control. Reminder that men wrote our constitutions. We have founding fathers. Women were considered property at the time these constitutions were written. And that's why we need the Equal Rights Amendment. And I'm proud to be voting in support of Representative Bonner's bill today. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Vice Chair Moeller. Representative Bonner, closing comments, and then we're gonna move to the vote.
Very briefly, I wanna thank all of our testifiers here today. As you can tell, these are exemplary individuals in our community. They lead our faith institutions. They lead in serving our country. They have served in our communities in incredible capacities. I want to thank them for their service to our state and to our country and for being here today. I also want to thank all of the committee for their excellent questions. And I remind the body that at its heart, this bill is about allowing voters at the state of Minnesota to decide whether they believe that those around them should have equal rights and protections under the law. I'm not really sure why that should be up for debate, quite frankly, but I can tell you that it is my belief that as lawmakers, that we should absolutely be doing our ample best to ensure that everyone is treated equally under the laws of the state of Minnesota 100% of the time. I do believe that the people of Minnesota deserve equal rights under the law and that they have earned the ability to vote on having equal protections under the law. Thank you.
All right, thank you, Representative Bonner. And with that, I will renew my motion that House File 726 be referred to the Committee on State Government Finance. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed?
Aye.
No.
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 The motion prevails, and the virtual gavel is tapped, and House File 726 is on its way to State Government Finance. Thank you to all of our testifiers and for the discussion on that bill. We have two related bills on the agenda today. The first one up is House File 2026. It is a Representative Hornstein bill. I will move that House File 2026 be re-referred to the Committee on State Government Finance. Representative Hornstein, I understand that you have an oral amendment. Would you like to tell me what, if you tell me what that amendment is and explain it, I will move it and then we can talk to the bill as a whole. So please go ahead, Representative Hornstein.
Good morning. Thanks so much, Madam Chair, members. Yes, this is a oral amendment that if you're looking at the bill, you can find the reference where I'm trying to change on page 2, lines 18 and 19. And Madam Chair, this bill is simply a resolution in support of action taken at the federal level, our federal colleagues in the House and Senate, on the a matter related to the ERA. And because the House took action on this last year, we're simply deleting on page 2, line 18, the Congress of, and then after states inserting Senate, because the Senate has not taken action. So we're simply updating something that took place since this bill was first introduced last year. So the amendment would be delete the Congress of on page 2, line 18, and then on page 2, line 19, after states, insert Senate. So the bill, phrase would simply read, the legislature of the state of Minnesota calls on the United States Senate to enact Senate Joint Resolution 1.
Okay, I'm going to repeat that and make sure that House Research can listen to it and make sure that we're doing it correctly. So I think it's actually line 1.18. So the motion would be to remove the first Congress of the, and then add the word Senate after United States. Ms. Mullen, if you can just confirm that that is accurate.
Sorry, had to unmute, Chair and members. This is Mary Mullen. The way I've heard the amendment is on page 2, line 18, delete the Congress of, page 2, line 19, after states, insert Senate. Does that sound correct?
Yep, I'm just going to, the version I have pulled up, the way it's coming up on my screen has the numbers, the line numbers different. So, so it's line 1.18 or 2.18, Ms. Mullen?
Page 2.
Okay.
Page 2, line 18, and page 2, line 19.
Got it. Okay, I've got the right version pulled up. I had my window too small. So it's so my motion would be to I will move that we remove the words the Congress of and then add the word Senate after United States on 2.19. Does everybody understand? All right, any questions on the amendment? All right, all those in favor, please say aye.
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 Aye. Aye.
Opposed? All right, the amendment prevails. We now have the bill in the form the author would like, and I will move House File 2026 as amended be referred to the Committee on State Government Finance. Now, Chair Hornstein, please go ahead and present your bill as amended.
Thank you so much, Madam Chair and members. And just, you know, on a personal note, I want to thank ERA Minnesota, all of the testifiers and their previous bill for, I think, making the case for why we need action on the ERA. And on a personal note, you know, I'm here because my mother of blessed memory, she passed in 1998, was a Polish Jewish immigrant to the United States. And in my hometown of Cincinnati, Ohio, she was among the first women to practice pediatric medicine. She and a small cohort of women really were among the first. And so for me growing up, women in the professions was a natural thing. I didn't understand, I didn't realize at the time, the struggles and actually the history-making nature of my mom and her several friends who also entered the field in the late 50s and early 60s all together. They were among the first in my hometown to be practicing pediatrics as women. And then in my own life and my own family, my wife was the first woman rabbi in the city of Minneapolis. And that didn't take place until 1988. So I am honored to be among these incredibly strong and powerful women, my mom, my wife, and now my daughters, who are continuing the fight for equity and human rights for all. And so, as I mentioned, Madam Chair, this is a memorial resolution. We do this from time to time in the Minnesota House, where this is not a bill with the force of law. It simply is a way for us to express as a state level government to our federal officials, both Minnesota elected officials at the federal level and nationally, that we support their work in the House and Senate. And so Senate Joint Resolution 1, which is the point of this resolution, eliminates the deadline for ratification. There are Ms. Folliard will be be testifying to why this is important that we do this. Senate Joint Resolution 1 was introduced last year, January 2021. House Joint Resolution 17 has passed the United States House of Representatives, and so this memorial resolution, or this resolution, is simply memorializing us to ask the Senate to do the same thing. And so with that, Madam Chair, I just have one testifier, Ms. Folliard, and she can get into some of the details of House File 2026.
All right, Ms. Folliard, if you can go ahead with your, reintroduce yourself and then go ahead with your testimony, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. Some of you might know that last week, the Equal Rights Amendment became the 28th Amendment to the U.S. Constitution. How did that occur? Well, we have met all of the constitutional requirements to be added as the 28th Amendment, and it has now passed the two-year time frame that is in the body of the federal Equal Rights Amendment bill to become law. And of course, there are blockades, and there always are blockades. We are dealing with the memo that was put out by the former administration Department of Justice Office of Legal Counsel preventing the U.S. archivists from ratifying. And we have an additional memo that came out last week that said that there were weaknesses in that, but that Congress has the power to make the decision to finally enact the Equal Rights Amendment. This week, this past week, President Biden came out and in the strongest terms said Congress should do this now. And so here we have SJ Res 1, Senate Joint Resolution Number 1. It got a day one status in the US Senate. This is what this resolution is pointed to. And what it's says in SJ Res 1 is that Congress will remove permanently that deadline on the Equal Rights Amendment. The deadline, the time limit, or what we call the extra textual time limit, because it's outside of the language that passed through the 38 states now, that time limit, as you know, was initially put on equality of rights as a time limit that would happen in 1979. It was later expanded to 1982. So we fast forward to now, and after three additional states passed it, there's always the questions about the rescissions, but no state rescission up until this point throughout all of U.S. history has ever held And there were rescissions against the 14th Amendment and against the 15th Amendment. And both of those rescissions went to the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court turned them back, saying that you can't rescind after the fact. So what this is doing is underscoring the fact that Minnesota is a ratified state. We ratified in 1973. The state of Minnesota and the people of Minnesota believe that women and men should have equal rights under the law. And the Equal Rights Amendment is a very simple amendment. All it says is equality of rights under the law shall not be denied or abridged by the United States or by any state on account of sex. So this is a simple resolution to Congress, a simple resolution now just aimed at the U.S. Senate, because the House passed it last year, asking them to do their duty and finalize the Equal Rights Amendment. So ERA Minnesota stands behind this bill, and we ask for your support. Thank you.
All right. With that, we'll move on to member questions. Representative Scott.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Hornstein, it's good to see you. I'm a little still upset with you personally because your Cincinnati team beat my Chiefs over the weekend. And it's going to take me a while to get over that. It really is. It's left a scar. But no, best wishes to Cincinnati.
Thank you.
I didn't know that about you. Someone shared that with me, that you were a Cincinnati fan. I didn't know you lived there previously. So my question is just about the open-endedness of kind of leaving a constitutional amendment out there dangling for 30, 40 years, and the precedent that that might set. And so I'm just wondering if you could address that.
Representative Hornstein.
Thanks. Thanks, Madam Chair, and good to see you too, Representative Scott. You know, that's a good question. And the ERA, I think, is unique. And because it has been around, as you point out, since the 70s, states continue to ratify. We've gone from 35 to 38. I would just answer that by saying, because we're so close, to have that extra time, to have this extension, I think would allow finally this very, very important constitutional amendment to be ratified by Congress. So, you know, we're on the cusp, and I know that Ms. Folliard probably has some perspective as well on this, but I think this is a unique situation, and that is why we're imploring the Senate to join the U.S. House of Representatives in asking for this extension.
All right, follow-up, Representative Scott.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thanks for your response, Representative Hornstein. My concern is, again, that this will be precedent setting, and I think any time you're amending the Constitution of the United States of America, it raises to a really high level. So if this sets precedent and leaves it open-ended, then the next constitutional amendment that may be proposed will want the same treatment. And again, it's such an important, obviously our Constitution hasn't been amended that many times, right? And oh, by the way, I flat out disagree with an earlier testifier's characterization that the Constitution of the United States is a living, breathing document. I flat out reject that. But my point here, Representative Hornstein, is we've had, you know, all this time to ratify this, and with different makeups of Congress throughout the last few years, it hasn't. States have voted to ratify them; they've pulled back out. So I really wrestle with the open-endedness of this, since it hasn't been. There's no precedent, and I'm just wondering if it isn't time to push the restart button and
and start from scratch on this, clearly identify what definitions mean, and allow a fresh start. I don't know. That's what I'm wrestling with, Representative Hornstein. So that's not necessarily a question you have to answer, but just sharing my concerns.
Thank you, Representative Scott. I'm going to go to Representative Robbins real quick, and then we need to move to the vote. Representative Robbins.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Hornstein. Nice to see you and appreciate the stories you shared about your family. Thank you. So I just wanted to go back about this deadline issue. I have a lot of concerns about this, and just wanted to get on the record that the deadline was extended once earlier. The original deadline, I think, had been in 1979, and then the Congress extended it to 1982, and the Congress has not acted since. And so about that time in 1982, when it was not extended, then Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg suggested at a panel that the deadline to ratify the measure as a constitutional amendment has expired, and the decades-long effort must start anew. So in 2020, Justice Ginsburg went on the record saying that she thought that trying to push this through after all these years so far past the deadline was not the proper course of action, and we should restart the whole effort. And similarly, there was an effort, an opinion from the DOJ that said, quote, Congress had the constitutional authority to impose the deadline on ratification of the ERA, and because that deadline has expired, the ER resolution is no longer pending before the states. And a federal judge had a similar point of view when they were in a ruling saying that states who were trying to sue the archivist to get those last three states in didn't even have standing. So I think that the legal decisions on this case really are all significantly weighted against rushing this through. And I think the vast majority of legal opinions that have been rendered are that we have to start over if this is indeed still the will of the country. And so I just want to get that on the record that this isn't like, oh, we missed a deadline, that this is a really serious question about Congress set a deadline and it was missed. And so just to sort of quick do a resolution saying, oh, well, too bad. I think that the precedent on that front is something we should be very careful about, and that I think jurists have already suggested we need to be careful about. So I would just love your reaction to that, Representative Hornstein, because I know you probably know all those opinions are looming out there.
Thank you, Representative Robbins. Representative Hornstein, your 15-second reaction to Representative Robbins.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and good to see you, Representative Robbins. Look, the United States Congress has taken action. They've done this. They've debated this. They believe that it's justified constitutionally. The Senate we're waiting for the Senate action. That's what this resolution does. And I don't think that justice and equality can wait another day or another year. And so I think it's urgent to get this done. It's been too long. And that's why I don't think we should press the restart button. Let's just get the Senate to agree with the House in Washington, and we will have this done once and for all.
All right. And with that, I will renew my motion that House File 2026, as amended, be referred to the Committee on State Government Finance. I also forgot that we need to do roll call votes for everything on Zoom. So we will go to the roll. Anna, please, to the roll on House Bill 2026 as amended being sent to State Government Finance. The clerk will take the roll. Aye.
Chairman Griffin, aye. Representative Mueller.
Aye.
Representative Mueller, aye. Representative Scott.
No.
Representative Scott, no. Representative Feist.
Aye.
Representative Feist, aye. Representative Frazier.
Aye.
Representative Frazier, aye. Representative Grossel. Representative Herr.
Aye.
Representative Herr, aye. Representative Hollins.
Aye.
Representative Hollins, aye. Representative Johnson.
No.
Representative Johnson, no. Representative Liebling.
Aye.
Representative Liebling, aye. Representative Long.
Aye.
Representative Long, aye. Representative Mortensen?
No.
Representative Mortensen, no. Representative Novotny?
Novotny, no.
Representative Novotny, no. Representative Farr?
No.
Representative Farr, no. Representative Fang?
Aye.
Representative Fang, aye. Representative Zhang?
Aye.
Representative Robbins, sorry about that.
No.
Representative Robbins, no. So that is 10 ayes and 6 nays.
All right, the motion prevails and House File 2026 as amended is on its way to State Gov Finance. I'm gonna hit the rewind button and do a roll call on House File 726, which was the original Representative Bonner bill, but we do need to do the roll call. So I will move that House File 726 be referred to the Committee on State Government Finance. The clerk will take the roll.
Chair Becker Finn.
Aye.
Representative Mueller.
Aye.
Representative Scott.
No.
Representative Feist.
Aye.
Representative Frazier.
Aye.
Representative Grossel. Representative Hurt.
Aye.
Representative Hollins.
Aye.
Representative Johnson.
No.
Representative Liebling.
Aye.
Representative Long.
Aye.
Representative Mortensen.
No.
Representative Novotny.
Novotny, no.
Representative Farr.
No.
Representative Robbins?
No.
Representative Vang?
Aye.
And Representative Zhang?
Aye.
That is 10 ayes and 6 nays.
All right, the motion prevails and now House File 726 is on its way to State Government Finance. Members, we have one more bill on the calendar today. This is informational only. This bill is not in the committee's possession, but due to the subject, we just thought it would be helpful to get folks up to speed so that they were aware that this bill is also out there related to the ERA. And with that, I will turn it over to Chair Moran to tell us about House File 2847.
Right. Thank you, Chair Becker Finn. members, this bill is a very simple bill. It instructs the revisor office to do a study of Minnesota statutes and rules to find any that are out of compliance with the Equal Rights Amendments as the 28th Amendment to the U.S. Constitution and to report back to the legislature needed changes by 2023. So, Chair Becker Finn and members, with the final ratification of the Equal Rights Amendment having occurred on January the 27, 2020, and the ERA having reached a 2-year waiting period after final ratification, the 28th Amendment is now the law of the land, and we will uphold the law. I swore an oath to uphold the U.S. Constitution. I am duly bound to confirm that the laws of Minnesota comply with the U.S. Constitution. This ERA compliance bill is a first step to achieving that goal. I have talked to my colleagues in other states who are also undertaking a similar project, like Arizona and North Carolina, Illinois, and more to come. Just this month, 24 states affirmed the federal court that our Constitution has a 28th Amendment. They are Colorado, Connecticut, Delaware, Hawaii, Illinois, Maine, Maryland, Massachusetts, Michigan, Minnesota, Nevada, New Jersey, New Mexico, New York, North Carolina, Oregon, Pennsylvania, Rhode Island, Vermont, Virginia, Washington, Wisconsin, along with the governors of Kansas and Montana. The current position of the U.S. Department of Justice, as issued by the previous Trump bar opinion, is out of alignment with current statements issued by the White House. The DOJ has asked for additional time to respond to the state attorney general, for which the deadline is in March of this year. We assume that this new administration will come to a better understanding. The ERA passed both the U.S. Senate and the U.S. House in 1972. And today, 38 states have ratified, which is all that Article 5 of the Constitution requires. It has therefore completed all constitutional requirements to be added as the 28th Amendment to the U.S. Constitution. Previously, no constitutional amendment having been passed by both houses of Congress, then ratified by the legislature of 3/4 of the state, has ever failed to become part of the U.S. Constitution. The ERA must be no exception. As we know, our courts balance fundamental rights when they develop, when they might overlap. We can't yell fire in a theater despite your right to free speech. Distinctions based on sex, however, is not automatically prohibited by law, but understanding where those distinctions currently exist, if they exist, in our statute and codes is necessary for serving the people of Minnesota. I hope we got that. This ERA compliance bill we introduced today is step one to ensuring our laws and codes are aligned with the 28th Amendment that reads, equality of rights under the law shall not be denied or abridged by the United States or by any state on account of sex. And with that, I yield for any questions that we may have.
Chair Moran, it's 10:01, but thank you for giving us a summary of that bill. Representative Scott and members, if and when this bill does officially move to us, we will have a full discussion as we always do. But we just wanted to make sure folks were aware that this bill was in the works as well. So thank you very much, Chair Moran. Thank you, members, for a busy first hearing of the year. And with that, we are adjourned.